Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Catherine Shen. For the first time, the EPA has set limits on PFAS chemicals in drinking water. PFAS stands for perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a group of man-made chemicals that have been used since the 1940s to waterproof and stain-proof products from clothing, makeup, and furniture to firefighting foam and semiconductors. Coming up, we discuss these forever chemicals and what the rule means for Connecticut with Department of Public Health Commissioner Manisha Juchani. But first, State Attorney General William Tong filed two lawsuits against 28 chemical manufacturers. He says they're responsible for knowingly contaminating Connecticut waters and natural resources and harming public health. And joining us now is Attorney General William Tong himself. General Tong, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And for our listeners, let us know if you have any questions for Attorney General Tong. Give us a call at 888-720-9677 or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So before we get to the status of the lawsuits, Attorney General Tong, do you mind reminding our listeners, you know, what are PFAS or forever chemicals and what's your sense of their harm?
Yeah, they're chemicals that are in everything and in all of us. 99.9% of all of us Americans have PFAS in our blood, and it's in the water supply. And that's why they're not just forever chemicals, but they're everywhere chemicals, and they're in almost everything from nonstick pots and pans. It's PFAS is basically industrial Teflon. It's what makes your pots and pans nonstick, to shampoo, to toothpaste, to Gore-Tex, outerwear, and then other major industrial applications like firefighting foam.
And what led you to the point of filing these lawsuits? You know, what's the legal case?
So I first started hearing about PFAS on a large scale when I became attorney general, now hard to believe, 6 years ago. And the focus at that time was on so-called natural resources damages or damages to the environment. We knew that PFAS was everywhere. We knew it didn't go away, that it stayed in the environment forever, that it was very hard to remediate. But the science around the harm to people and to animals was still developing at that time. And now we know that PFAS is linked to a host of cancers, including liver cancer, that it is linked to infertility, to low birth weight, to diabetes, and so very serious physical harms to public health and to humans and animals. And so because of that and the natural resources damages, we're compelled to step in, and we've sued most of the major chemical manufacturers in this country, including 3M and DuPont, who are responsible for producing these chemicals.
And so we've had this conversation before, and we know that this is not new information or new news, really. But can you talk about, you know, what is the status of these lawsuits today?
So they're really just beginning. I just recently announced in the last few months two major fronts in our litigation. One against the companies that produce PFAS broadly, and then another lawsuit focused on the companies that produce firefighting foam, or AFFF, AFFF foam, which is still in use. It's being phased out. But AFFF foam is the foam that's used to put out highly volatile and basically really hot and very serious fires, particularly in industrial settings like airports. And AFFF foam has been used for years, for example, at places like Bradley, and was used for major fires, including we had a very serious fire of a crash involving vintage airplanes a few years ago, and as a result of that, we had to put it out with AFFF foam, and the foam then leaches into the environment, into the water supply.
And so we have a Connecticut Mirror investigative reporter, Andrew Brown, who was able to confirm that the lawsuits your office filed were recently transferred to federal court. Can you talk about the significance of that, and also if your litigation is being put together with other similar lawsuits happening in South Carolina?
Yes, this is a common maneuver. It's called removal, when a defendant or set of defendants tries to get out of state court, where they perceive that in Connecticut state court, the state of Connecticut is in a better position, and they try to move it to federal court, where the defendants think they'll get a better judge or better circumstances. That's not necessarily true, but that's just a common maneuver in their perception. It's interesting. This has a lot of parallels to our climate case against ExxonMobil. Mm. We also allege in that case that ExxonMobil lied to Connecticut and the American people about the fact of climate change and climate science since the 1950s, about the same time that 3M and DuPont knew about PFAS and the harms to all of us and the environment. They tried to remove in that case to get out of state court, and they lost. And so those cases are going back to state court. And so we expect the same thing to happen here. They'll try to remove to federal court. We expect to beat them on the removal question and bring them back to state court.
And you mentioned 3M earlier, too. And before filing these two suits, your office had objected to the terms that the 3M settlement when it was announced in June. And that particular settlement was finalized earlier this month. So how would you differentiate this suit specific to private water systems?
Well, we weren't involved in that suit directly as parties, although what 3M tried to do in that suit is basically through the back door extinguish the state's claims against 3M. We were able to fight that and beat that back, and basically we caught them in the act of trying to use that lawsuit to shut down the state of Connecticut in our claims. But basically, you know, my concern, and it's still my concern, is that it's too early to settle on these terms, and not enough money and not enough certainty. And basically these private water systems, including some in Connecticut, were being asked to sign away their rights when we don't know what the future holds. So yeah, sure, they'd get a little money now, and they would try to confront the issue now, particularly that EPA is ratcheting up the requirements for us to remediate PFAS. But I just thought that on balance, it wasn't enough money, frankly, for them to sign away their rights in the future, and they would be left holding the bag. All of us would be left holding the bag to remediate PFAS when the true scale and cost is known.
And we were talking about private water systems earlier, and also public water systems were able to opt out of that 3M settlement during a very short window. I think it's about 20 or so days. Can you explain what that means, and whether you know any Connecticut utilities may have opted out?
Yeah, I don't have the current rundown of who opted in and opted out because we're not in that case. But suffice it to say, that was one of my major objections, which was this is too quick, not enough money, not enough certainty. And it was not a settlement that I would have signed.
And you know, a year ago, we were talking about the EPA setting standards for these. And now a year later, we're talking about the EPA limits that were finalized this month. You know, are you heartened by the progress that's happening right now?
I'm heartened. And at the same time, I'm girding for, you know, the long fight ahead of us to pay the cost of remediation. You know, again, to liken it to climate change. Sure, I've taken action. Yes, I feel good about our claims, but the task ahead of us in addressing the problem, the lawsuit's one thing.
Right.
The real issue is, how do we deal with this public health hazard and environmental problem long term? The scale is huge, probably unknowable, and the cost similarly huge, and in some ways unfathomable. So when you talk about something that is so ubiquitous, that lasts basically forever and is in all of our bloodstreams, That is a huge undertaking. Now, of course, the response is not to throw up your hands and say, why bother? We have to fight it, and we have to try to find ways to, as cost effectively as possible, remediate the problem.
Well, and then building with what you just said too, you know, the fact that this is so, this, we don't even know what this, how large the scale is. It's everywhere. It's forever. It's unfathomable. And so, I mean, this is one of those questions where what resources are available? You know, I think most people don't want to throw up their hands, but what can be done? What's practical to be done right now? And what resources are available, and are what are what's needed for water utilities to either test for PFAS or to avoid it if they aren't already starting that?
Yeah, we have to choose from, just a set of bad options, right? There are no good answers, and that's kind of what I do every day. It's sort of the nature of my job is to look at a really tough situation, know there aren't any good answers or clear answers, and try to make your best judgment. I think there are some technologies that are available now, some filtration technologies. One private water system tells me it's at least $130 million just to get this off the ground. That's a huge number for them. And so we've got to go one community, one water supply at a time and try to put this together. We got something like 6,300 different sites that we know about that need to be addressed and remediated. And we've just got to get to it.
And I think there has been concerns that was raised that a lot of the costs will end up coming out from the consumer. So do you have concerns that rates for water bills could increase in order to help cover this cost?
Yeah, of course I'm concerned about that, all of that, and where the money's going to come from, which is why I'm pursuing these 30-something chemical companies so aggressively, and why I'm going to make them pay. 3M and DuPont are two of the biggest companies on Earth, and there have been some maneuvers by DuPont to avoid liability, and we're chasing them, just like I chased Purdue and the Sacklers, even though they try to hide behind various legal maneuvers. The challenge for all of us too is, and this is a difficult balance, the numbers are so big that we could easily put them out of business. And if everybody got what they were demanding in terms of a judgment, that would probably put 3M out of business many times over. And so you have to balance too, how much you can extract from them, and try to avoid putting them out of business, because if you put them out of business, then you go into bankruptcy and you risk not getting anything. So there's this difficult balance, frankly, that I guess it's a difficult dance, but you have to try to position it so that you can get a huge recovery to pay for remediation while having a defendant who can continue to pay.
And clearly, this is an ongoing situation. And as you continue that difficult dance, Attorney General Tong, any final thoughts for our listeners before we let you go?
Well, I guess I would say this, which is when you hear about a huge environmental issue like this, public health issue, there's a temptation to throw up your arms, and then B, some people get really worried, and what I don't want people to do is to panic and focus too much on it so that it really impairs people in their lives and going about their everyday tasks and focusing on raising their families and doing their jobs. But what I do want to communicate to people is that it is a huge issue, that we have to have this conversation at the local and state level and the federal level, and that we're going to have to make huge investments, and people need to be ready for that, because it's not something that it affects only a certain segment of the population. It's not something that just a few of us caused or are responsible for. We all use these products. They're everywhere, and we've got to confront it together.
You've been listening to Connecticut Attorney General William Tong. Thank you so much for being with us this morning, General Tong.
Thank you.
And coming up, we hear from the Department of Public Health Commissioner Manisha Jutani. You can also join the conversation, 888-720-9677. That's 888-720-WNPR, or leave us a comment on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Catherine Shen. There are new federal limits on PFAS chemicals in drinking water. But what does that mean for how Connecticut water utilities monitor and report the so-called forever chemical? Joining us now to discuss is Dr. Manisha Jutani. She's their commissioner with the Connecticut Department.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygening it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed, and in our center, with a special ECMO on the Go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to heart for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Of public health. Thank you so much, Dr. Jutani, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Catherine.
And for our listeners, let us know if you have any questions for the commissioner. Join the conversation 888-720-9677 or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So, Commissioner, we'd love to get your response to Attorney General William Tong and the significance of these suits and settlements, you know, from your point of view. Anything that jumped out to you from the conversation earlier?
You know, I think he made some very important points on the impact that these chemicals have on our society and the significant cost that it is going to take to be able to address the contamination that these chemicals have in our drinking water systems. So we know that we have been given investments, thankfully, due to the bipartisan infrastructure law that the federal government passed, to be able to give us as the drinking water regulator in many ways in the state of Connecticut, the opportunity to provide water systems money specifically to address PFAS remediation efforts. And so money through the EPA arriving through the federal government to Connecticut, which then systems can apply for that we can then help them get on the right track, is the first important investment. However, as you heard what he was describing, the scope and scale of what these remediation efforts may require, depending on the area and depending on the amount of contamination or system, is really a little bit unknown right now. And we do anticipate that it's going to be more. And that's why the efforts that the Attorney General is doing as well will help Connecticut get on track to really be able to address the issue that PFAS chemicals pose. And it's not going to be just from EPA funds that we are going to be able to have, but hopefully there will be ways that through these lawsuits that basically keeping Connecticut residents safer in terms of the safety of their drinking water supply will be able to be accomplished.
So we definitely will want to get into those potential resources in a little bit, but I also want to get to talk about the standards, because we had talked about this almost exactly a year ago. We knew these standards were coming down the pipe, so to speak, for a while now. So how do these finalized standards impact water utilities in Connecticut? You know, what's next, Commissioner?
We in Connecticut have known for some time that PFAS chemicals, there's no amount of PFAS chemicals that are helpful to health. But the challenge has been, what are the real impacts and what are thresholds that we can actually measure with testing that we have, actually remediate and monitor on an ongoing basis? And what are the actual health impacts that we know that they pose? So this is where the science has been continually evolving. And when I came into this role about 2.5 years ago, DPH had about 4 different PFAS chemicals limits that we thought were probably based on available science, not good for human health. And around that time period, subsequent to that, we then released levels for 6 additional ones. So a total of 10, which we have had out. saying that these are advisories, these are guidelines on what water systems could look at in terms of trying to get below. The EPA coming forward with what they have put forward gives us a lot more ability as a regulator over these next 5 years to be able to get water systems to a point where they must be below certain levels. So up until now, we've had a number of public water systems that have engaged in testing, voluntary testing, and many systems post these data on their websites. They distribute them to their customers. But what will be different going forward is that 5 years from now, these are going to be enforceable levels. And that's why the investments over these next several years will be important to be able to help mitigate those health impacts that we know about and new ones that we continue to learn about.
And so you mentioned science. So I want to talk about the science of exposure. And I'm going to throw out some numbers and a little background for our listeners here, because the DPH issues and enforces these drinking water advisory limits that we had talked about before. And these were updated last year from 70 to 10 parts per trillion. And federal officials have told the Department of Public Health that this is expected to be a 3-year transition to meet the new standards, which are 4 parts per trillion. So, Commissioner, can you explain what the 4 parts per trillion means?
So to put it in terms that are really understandable, who would understand 4 parts per trillion?
Exactly.
Really what that means is it's the equivalent of 4 drops of water in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. That's actually pretty hard to actually contemplate, that just 4 drops into an Olympic-sized swimming pool, one, needs to be able to be tested and monitored, but 2, more than that, has potential health impacts that we are trying to remove. So it does give us some humility on the impact that these various different chemicals can have, especially when we ingest them. And that is what we are trying to get below going forward.
And can you also talk about the differentiation between PFAS from microplastics?
Yeah, so microplastics are basically small different fibers that might be present on various different plastic chemicals, and that can degrade. And, you know, we have plastics throughout our lifespan, as we all know. I mean, you know, we know that water bottles or other plastic containers that we use, multiple different plastics can potentially shred microplastics. The problem is PFAS are really more the chemicals related to the non-stick things that we are familiar with in our lives. So whether it be non-stick pans, whether it be something in carpet coating or that we coat on top of, let's say, anything that we don't want something to spill on and potentially, you know, stain our chairs or furniture. These are all things where nonstick materials may have been used. Where the biggest health concerns, we don't really know much, and we don't believe that there is much of a health impact from topical exposure, but we can't really say for sure. We don't have enough information. Where we think the greatest exposure is when it's ingested. And that's where the contamination of drinking water is more of a problem. Right now, the science on those microplastics is still not fully known. So I don't have information to share specifically on the health impacts on that. Sure. But I do think this is all one step at a time. And where we are trying to focus our efforts right now are on these PFAS chemicals and the health impacts that they have.
And so, because, you know, there's a lot of unknowns that we are talking about today, and we're hearing a lot of nonstick materials is where you can find PFAS. And Attorney General Tong earlier had also gave us a huge list of where you can potentially find these PFAS chemicals. So can you talk about, you know, how does the DPH go about testing for this? Because at some point, it really is up to the water utility in the area, whether for-profit or public. Is that correct?
Yes. And so the DPH does not necessarily do the testing ourselves. What we regulate a number of different types of industries. So, for example, we regulate healthcare institutions from nursing homes to hospitals and et cetera. And in the water space, we regulate the drinking water systems. And so the expertise on the water And the actual testing is in labs, is in the people who actually have the access to the water supply. What we do is monitor that, regulate that. And up until now, we've just been advising water systems, and they've been able to voluntarily submit test results that they obtain on their water supply to us for us to evaluate, to then evaluate where do they fall in terms of what we think so far have been recommended standards. The major difference that's happened now with this new rule and what the EPA has done is now we actually have some enforcement authority that goes along with that. And that's not going to happen overnight. We cannot expect systems to be able to just turn on a switch and be able to do this immediately, which is why there is several years to be able to first make sure you're doing the testing. And 5 years from now, DPH will actually be regulating that to make sure it is below these standards that have been outlined.
And so, you know, as we continue to understand this a little bit better, you know, USA Today has a map that shows water utilities that have reported PFAS above the detectable level using the EPA's database. So this map also includes parts of Fairfield County and Central Connecticut here. So do you expect this map to start to fill in as more utilities come online with testing and reporting?
Yes, absolutely. I think that over the last several years, we've seen more and more public water systems starting to engage in this process. This is an issue that has been top of mind for several years now. And so the various systems, as they've been able to, have started to move forward and are reporting more. And part of what we're doing, even in this conversation today, is helping to educate the public about what the risks are and what they can do and how they can try to get more information about what is going on with their own drinking water system. And so they, you know, people at the end of the day want to feel comfort that the water that they're drinking is safe. And the reality is just switching to something like bottled water for everything, one, does not necessarily address the other public health benefits of public water, number one. Number two, it also does not address microplastics, as you talked about, or other potential PFAS that could come from bottles themselves. And so really, this is a challenge that we need to be looking at holistically to be able to help give people that confidence and be able to see those publicly reported data sets and say, okay, this is what's going on in my system. And what am I going to do about it if I'm in an area where maybe there are higher levels being reported?
And so later on, we're going to hear from Connecticut Mirror investigative reporter Andrew Brown, who's been covering PFAS in a moment. But he predicts that we're going to get a flurry of press releases from water utilities in the state reporting PFAS for the first time, sort of lifting the veil, right, on where these chemicals live. And so because Attorney General Tong earlier also mentioned education, information, and do not want the communities to start panicking. But Commissioner, you know, what concerns do you have, especially from a public health messaging standpoint, to educate around what this means and why is transparency important?
I think it's very important because actually, if we think back to the great advances in public health, a safe drinking water supply is at the crux of what a safe society is really about. If you go back hundreds of years and you think about the first cholera outbreaks that happened, let's say, in London or in other areas of Europe, and even that have happened in the United States, it was really being able to set up public water systems with treatment and testing and monitoring and enforcement that allowed for some of the basic things that we think about, which is that you can turn on your tap and use that water, that have been able to advance health in ways that are far beyond what people used to experience hundreds of years ago. I mean, if you think about the mortality that resulted from a variety of infectious diseases, but cholera being an important one when it comes to water, the impacts are quite stark. Now, the impacts of PFAS are not immediate. So it's not something like an infectious disease. It's not something like an infectious disease. It is something that is cumulative over time, and not everybody who has exposure actually has a problem from PFAS, but certainly there are people that do. And we do know that cumulatively, we do want to get this out of our water supply. And so the impacts that the ability to monitor, test, and then give people that confidence that the water that they've come to trust is something that they can continue to trust is going to be very, very important. And I am very grateful that the EPA has given this tool to us that we can work towards to help people have that continued confidence in public water that is available.
And so clearly this is something that has been happening for a while, and it's going to continue to happen for the far future, really, as we continue to figure out, you know, how to do more testing and get the resources. So back to resources, as we've mentioned earlier, can you talk about, you know, what is available out there for drinking water utilities in the state to get up to speed on testing and reporting? You know, how do you know, do you have an idea of where the fundings can come from, as we talked about a little bit earlier?
So I was talking to you about the bipartisan infrastructure law. One of the things that has been a steady source of funding in the state of Connecticut for the last several decades is something called the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. This is something that the Department of Public Health manages, and different water systems apply to us for loans that they then pay back over time to be able to do upgrades and improvements to their water systems. A lot of times this would be just routine aging infrastructure, dealing with things related to, let's say, E. coli contamination of water, and a variety of different things. What happened in the bipartisan infrastructure law is that the federal government passed this law that gave a specific funding, a specific line item for PFAS remediation efforts. So it gave us an additional infusion of funds, a separate and apart from the routine work that we go on to maintain on a regular basis. So this is the funding. We have millions of dollars that are coming into the state over the next several years to be able to help address this. Is it going to be enough for every water system throughout the state? Probably not. But the reality is it is a huge, huge investment, well beyond what we've ever had before. And that's part of what we can do to really make sure that we give these water systems at least an opportunity to apply for this funding. We then, you know, evaluate the various different applications that come through and divide it up and send it out in an equitable fashion that has been reviewed. And I think that that's really the major impetus that we have to make sure that there's awareness for the water systems as well, because this is a resource that they have aside and apart from whatever they have internally, and where what they may be able to get over time, let's say, through other efforts that may be ongoing.
And talking about funds, we asked Attorney General Tong this question earlier as well. You know, Commissioner, do you have concerns that rates for water bills could increase in order to cover this cost? So with the burden being on, parts of the burden being on the consumer?
Of course. I mean, certainly that is a concern always in terms of where these, you know, funds are going to come from and where they might be shifted. But I think for us as the regulator, particularly on the quality, and that it's really health quality and quality of life and safety that we're focused on at DPH, I think what I want to make sure that the systems know and that consumers know is that there is this opportunity that DPH has in terms of funding, where it isn't individuals who necessarily can come to DPH. It is for the water systems. However, I will also comment that, you know, about two-thirds of our state may have public water, but there's a lot that is on well water as well. And the EPA is signaling that although in general we think well water may be safer, there are areas and communities, you heard from the Attorney General about, let's say, firefighting foam. If you've had firefighting foam around your property, might have been able to seep into your well, you potentially could have very high PFAS levels in well water even. And so testing for that and then potentially even remediation for that is something that the EPA is signaling, that even private wells, we may see funding that comes down the pike that will be able to help private homeowners as well.
And so as we continue to learn about this more, you know, for listeners who may be looking to test or treat their own drinking water, what would you recommend, Commissioner?
So there are labs that are commercial labs out there available that can do this type of testing. I think if you're on a public water system, I would not recommend testing your own water. I would rely on the system. However, if you do have well water, I would say that you could certainly test that specific water coming out of the well and certainly engage in a regular process like that. I think that there, for public water systems, there's so many different, entry points and exit points. And so I think that there are going to be challenges with that, but that's what I would recommend.
And we talked about that USA Today map earlier and also whether or not we should be concerned. So should we be concerned about our water, or does it depend on where you live within the state?
I think that it, one, depends on where you live. Number two, I would also say that the threats from PFAS are not immediate. They are cumulative and they are over a lifespan. If you are, let's say, pregnant, you have a young child, or there's where specifically around development. So if you're pregnant and you are concerned particularly about the effects, I think that is something that is understandable, because we know that the development is a time period where the impacts could be potentially more immediate. For the rest of the public in general, a lot of these impacts are cumulative. And so I would recommend asking your water system what their levels are and getting educated about this. I think that would be my first and foremost recommendation. I do use public water. I have looked at what my water system levels are and what it is in my area. That's what I would recommend to everybody else. I would recommend that you do that and then try to, create a path forward from there.
Dr. Manisha Dutani, Public Health Commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Public Health, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for this conversation. Truly appreciate it.
And after a quick break, we'll have Connecticut Mirror's Andrew Brown break down all of this for us, very much unlike PFAS, which does not break down. They are forever chemicals after all. You can join the conversation, 888-720-9677, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Catherine Shen. This hour, we're discussing PFAS, or forever chemicals, and what new federal limits on them mean for drinking water. Joining us now is one reporter who has been covering the efforts to regulate and litigate PFAS in South Carolina and Connecticut, Andrew Brown, who is with Connecticut Mirror, and he's an investigative reporter. Thanks, Andrew, for being with us again.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And for our listeners, let us know if you have any questions. Give us a call, 888-720-9677, or leave us a comment on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. So, Andrew, you've been following the conversation with Attorney General Tong as well as Commissioner Manisha Dutani. Anything that jumped out to you in terms of what's been going on?
I think their responses kind of just hit on the scope of this, of what not just the Connecticut state government, but the entire country is now dealing with. These chemicals, again, are, I think the word that everybody uses is ubiquitous. They are everywhere. I've had researchers tell me in the past that if you start testing for them, you will find them. So we're at a point now where the federal government is, I think some environmental groups would say, finally doing something about PFAS. And the fallout from that is going to be significant. It's going to be costly, and it's going to impact a lot of water utilities and a lot of people.
And so, because you've been also covering sort of the corporate side of things and the corporate accountability onto regulations, so can you talk about, hearing what Commissioner Dutani has to say? What did you make of these standards being finalized? Because you and I also had this conversation a year ago, and that was sort of in the process, and now it's actually finalized.
I mean, this is finally enforceable, as she said, right?
Yes.
Other standards that have existed in Connecticut were, as I've written before, were just recommendations. There was no way to hold a water utility accountable if they found it and did not want to treat it. That has changed. Now PFAS, I think just to put it as simplistic as possible, PFAS is now like lead. And a bunch of other regulated contaminants that water utilities have to test for, every month or every year. So it's now in the realm of everybody must test and everybody must know. And so that's going to roll out over the next couple of years, but it's a game changer if as far as regulating these chemicals and trying to make sure that people aren't consuming them.
And with that too, you know, can you explain the lay of the land as far as for-profit versus public water utilities? You know, is that an important distinction to make?
Sure. If you're looking for information about what your water quality is, you got to know who is providing your water, right? So in some parts of Connecticut, you still have municipal water systems, government-owned water utilities. Think Danbury, Waterbury, New Britain, Manchester. Those types of towns have their own, essentially, water departments. There are large swaths of the state, however, that have public water systems, that is in quotes, but they are owned and run by private companies. So think Aquarian and think Connecticut Water Company. Those are the two largest. They are going to be, just like public water utilities, required to test for this. And they have been, actually, those two companies voluntarily, and they have been reporting it to their customers already. So they're kind of a step ahead, actually. But, you know who your water utility is, know who provides your water. It's who you pay your bill to. So that's where your first step is in trying to figure out if, your tap water had or still does have traces of this chemical in it.
And so, of course, we have a focus on drinking water right now. And Commissioner Dutani also touched on this, too. And you just mentioned that we can find, lead also has PFAS in one of the items that we can find PFAS. And can you talk about, what do we know today about where PFAS can be found in the state? And how might that change with these new standards?
The state is still just starting to get its arms around this. I think a couple years ago, they created a task force made up of state officials, including Department of Public Health employees and the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, which regulates the environment. And they have been undergoing sampling in, for instance, not just water utilities, but also fish tissue, which is a way that scientists have found this, because it bioaccumulates or it compounds in fish tissue. So they've been testing fish species throughout the state to try to get an understanding of which waterways, for instance, which rivers, streams have concentrations of PFAS in them that are accumulating in those aquatic species. And so they're still just starting to spotlight where problem areas might be. Again, these chemicals don't break down, so you may have had an environmental contamination event that occurred four decades ago, that those chemicals could still be leaching into the groundwater and into surface water like streams, rivers, ponds.
Well, and of course, I know we're still in early days on this, and so need a lot of time to process, really. But have you heard from water utilities here in Connecticut about what compliance looks like? Is that something that you're seeing already, have seen, continuing to see?
Yeah, I've spoken to, I wrote a story last year about some of the latest water utilities to have tested and found these chemicals. It's complicated. They know it's expensive. The directors of these water departments or water utilities are taking this seriously. They know now it's a federal regulation. They're not going to violate that, or I wouldn't think they would be. And so they're just trying to figure out the most cost-effective best way to remove these chemicals from the water supply now. That's not easy. They've obviously acknowledged the multi-million dollar price tag that this is going to cost for each water utility. We're talking millions for all of these water utilities, not just cumulatively across the state. So it's a huge amount of money. And I think that is the thing they are most focused on, right? Their job is to provide safe water. It's also to provide cost-effective water. So, that is their plan. There are many utilities in the state that are already applying for that revolving fund that the health commissioner referenced. So people are already taking action, but it's going to be a continual rollout of these test results and ultimately the remediation that is necessary.
Well, and we're here talking about health concerns. We're here talking about cost concerns. So those are, I think, two really major things that could really vie for the attention of the public. And as a journalist, you know, do you have concerns about public reaction to this or the needs around public education?
I think it's, you know, the commissioner coming on this show is a good sign that they're ready to help to explain this. And that is part of their job, as being the primary drinking water regulator in the state, is public education around these types of issues. So, and it's not new. I mean, the commissioner and the health department here in the state have been trying to educate people on this. So, again, I think she's correct in that it's an emphasis of this is a problem over the life of someone drinking these chemicals in the water, but it is not an immediate health risk to most people. It is not something that you are going to consume one day and end up having, you know, a health impact the next.
And we started the conversation with some lawsuits, and now I think we're going to finish off with a little bit update from that, because we mentioned South Carolina earlier, and also you have been covering the larger efforts around corporate accountability. So can you talk about the lawsuits that are piling up in South Carolina? You know, where does the lawsuit fit into this conversation?
That was largely whenever you heard Attorney General Tong speak about the AFFF, the firefighting foam. Those lawsuits were placed there. They were focused on contamination that resulted from that product, which contained several types of PFAS. Those lawsuits are very serious. I mean, it's one of the big drivers of the litigation because of just how frequently that product contaminated drinking water. 3M, as you said earlier in the show, has tried to settle those or has gotten a final settlement agreement. But there are water utilities that had the option to opt out, right? And so they can continue to pursue their claims against that company. But that was a big question. I mean, that settlement for 3M is huge. There were investment analysts that I've spoken to previously who were concerned that the amount and the number of lawsuits that were piling up against 3M could actually threaten the existence of that company. So that lawsuit for them was kind of critical.
And we have got about a minute here left. But any final thoughts, Andrew, especially, you know, what angles do you think you're going to be taking on after this? And what do you hope our listeners take away from this conversation today?
Well, I'm interested to see, you know, the continued rollout over the next couple years of more water utilities testing. That will give everyone a clearer picture of really the scope of contamination in Connecticut. We don't have, as the health commissioner said, a full picture yet, but we will as those test results roll in.
Right. And what do you hope listeners get out from this conversation today?
You know, think about your water utility a little bit more. And there are water quality reports out there for every water utility in Connecticut. Seek them out. Try to figure out what is in them and to understand them. I think people sometimes neglect to think about that enough.
Well, when I was drinking my water last year, I was thinking about it differently when we had this conversation. Now, after today, I'm going to be thinking about it even more. So thank you very much, Andrew Brown, investigative reporter for the Connecticut Mirror, for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Catherine Shen. Today's show is produced by Katie Pellico. Our technical producer is Dylan Reyes. Download Where We Live anytime on your favorite podcast app. And thank you so much for listening.